Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Eureka!
Eureka!
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
Eureka!
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 Eureka! Eureka!
This is Eureka on the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan, and on the show today, I'll be talking about the act of listening to space. That's right, listening to it. I mean, how do we usually observe the universe? Through telescopes, we do it visually. But my guest today does something quite different and remarkable in that she listens to space. Ana Arja is the director of the Art Science Museum at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore. She is also an artist, an incredible artist who deftly merges her love for both art and science across her many works in which she explores the universe through sound.
Hi, my name is Ana Arja, and I'm the Director of Art Science Museum in Singapore.
Ana, I am incredibly blown away by the art that you do. And before we get into the art that you do, I guess the common belief is that there is no sound in space because sound cannot travel through a vacuum. So how does it work?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. Sound can't travel in a vacuum. There's two ways that we can find ourselves listening to space. The method that I've been engaged with in my artistic practice and research is radio astronomy. So while sound waves can't travel in space, as you know very well, light waves are very good at traveling in space. And radio waves are a type of light waves. They're just in a different part of the electromagnetic spectrum to light waves. So that makes all of the stars and many of the planets in the universe giant radio transmitters. They're big broadcasters, and they're sending us radio waves all the time. And using radio telescopes here on Earth, or indeed instruments that we can launch on spacecraft, we can receive those radio waves. And just like the radio receivers and transmitters that we're using to broadcast this program here, we can take those radio waves and turn them into sound waves. And that's basically the method that I've been using over the years to listen to space. So we just take the radio wave, turn it into a mechanical wave, a sound wave, and then we can listen to stars, we can listen to Jupiter, we can listen to the sun.
Incredible. So it's, in a sense, interpretive.
Yeah, that's dead right. You know, kind of like, so if we were in a spacecraft and we were, you know, kind of, we were basically cruising past Jupiter and we wound down our window, we're not going to hear Jupiter with our ears. You know, we're still going to need our instruments, you know, our technology. And that's basically because we don't have electromagnetic sensors built into our bodies. You know, our ears are not antennas. They're seashells almost, and they're very good at detecting sound waves. But we don't really have much apparatus on our bodies to detect electromagnetic waves. So that's why we use technology. If we were a different kind of animal, like a shark, for instance, they're very good at detecting electromagnetic waves. They've got kind of inbuilt organs specifically for that job. But we don't have those, so that's why we build radio receivers and antennas and amplifiers to take these electromagnetic waves and turn them into something that we can hear.
I don't know why, but as soon as you mentioned that, I had flashbacks of watching Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but aliens come to Earth and they're trying to talk to whales.
Exactly, right. Yeah, that's it. So, you know, kind of we've got amazing species of animal all around, you know, kind of this incredible planet that have got different sensory apparatus to ours. And sharks are just one that have got really cool electromagnetic sensors. But a lot of birds, you know, kind of, as we well know, have a magnetic sense that helps them navigate. And their bodies are just made differently. And ours were made very, very efficiently for detecting sound waves at close range. Whales are really awesome at detecting sound at, you know, kind of at longer ranges. So, you know, we're all made differently, and we're lucky that we can use technology to fill in for the bits our bodies can't do.
So when I was reading about what you did and I visited your website, it reminded me of the story I once heard of people using record players to read x-rays. And it reminded me of, I mean, and apparently x-rays produce this incredibly haunting sound, but it reminded me of the various things we do to read different things. The fact that audio can be stored on magnetic tape, for example, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's the same tape that's on the back of your credit card, and you could play that through a player if you wanted to. I mean, so what inspired this? What inspired you to go looking for sounds in space on planets?
Well, you know what? It was basically working in a radio station. So, you know this yourself. When you work in a radio station, you have to have a little bit of an understanding about, you know, kind of how the whole technical operation works. And if you know a bit about, you know, kind of engineering and a little bit about, you know, kind of physics, you know, just sort of 101 levels of physics, then you know that we're broadcasting now by, you know, kind of a transmitter sending radio waves. You know, kind of through space, and our listeners are picking up those radio waves using, you know, kind of simple radio receivers, and then they're listening to our voices because those radio receivers have got an amplifier built in.
And it's centuries old technology.
Exactly. So Tesla came up with this basic idea in 1893. Marconi came up with this idea in 1895, and we've been doing it more or less ever since. And you know, what really inspired me and my collaborative partner, Adam Hyde, was when we realized that this whole process that we were very familiar with doing, you know, kind of in our radio stations, happens at this grand epic scale in our solar system and through our galaxy and in every galaxy in the universe. We couldn't help but be pretty curious as to what those stars were broadcasting. And as soon as we had that kind of idea in mind, then it was, you know, a process of finding science institutions, radio telescopes, talking to NASA, you know, about how, you know, what the best way of going about creating listening devices that would be specialized in detecting these radio waves from space and how we would do that.
Am I right in thinking that radio astronomy is still something of a niche and that it isn't as widely practiced an activity?
Well, it's I guess of the fields of astronomy, it's just a bit younger than optical astronomy. You know, so Galileo first started using telescopes to enable us to see kind of planets and stars better quite some time ago, you know, a few centuries ago. And Karl Jansky didn't accidentally found the science of radio astronomy until 1933. And in fact, it wasn't really until the 1950s that the science took off after World War II. So as a kind of field of science, it's really only been around for about 60 years. But now it's an incredibly important part of our understanding of astronomy. There's, you know, kind of incredibly important discoveries that have been made through radio astronomy. And I guess the kind of crowning jewel of those would be the discovery of the cosmic microwave background radiation that proved the existence of the Big Bang. That's a pretty good discovery.
That's a pretty big deal. You
know, it's a pretty big deal. And in 1964, when Penzias and Wilson used a radio telescope to find that that sort of faint afterglow of the Big Bang, science, you know, kind of wasn't completely convinced that the universe had a beginning. There were two rival theories that were kicking around at the time. One was called the steady state theory, which said that the universe had always been and it would always be. And the other was the so-called Big Bang theory, which said that the universe must have had some kind of beginning in time. And the critics of the Big Bang theory said, yeah, but if it did, then there must be some sort of evidence of it. And no one had ever found it until a couple of guys in New Jersey were, you know, experimenting with the radio telescope and Bell Laboratories, and they accidentally discovered this afterglow of the Big Bang in microwave radio range.
Who would have thought that listening to space would contribute to our understanding of the universe? I mean, for the longest time, we've always just considered staring out into space.
And now I think, you know, the big advancement that the concept of listening to space has received is the discovery of gravitational waves, the direct observation of gravitational waves, which the LIGO experiment successfully announced earlier this year. And gravitational waves, as you know well, are a different type of wave to, you know, kind of both sound waves and electromagnetic waves. And the way we detect them is a little bit more analogous with the way that our ears operate than, you know, kind of radio waves. And so a lot of the scientists who are furthering the new science of gravitational wave astronomy do speak quite explicitly about the, you know, kind of process of listening to the universe, listening to vibrations through space and time. And so the birth of this new science is a phenomenally interesting moment in time for us to be living through. And we should expect some astonishing discoveries and announcements in the next few years, now that this whole way of probing the universe has been proven to be so useful.
So talk to me about what it was like, the first sound, listening to that first sound. Do you remember that first sound you heard from this project?
Yeah, I remember it very distinctly. We were working with the Ventspils International Radio Astronomy Center in Latvia on a former Soviet surveillance station inside a 32-meter radio telescope, which was used back in Soviet times to spy on communication between America and Northern Europe. And it had been repurposed into a science facility by Latvian scientists after the fall of the Soviet Union and the withdrawal of the Soviet Union from Latvia. And they had really just got this antenna, this 32-meter antenna, up and running, you know, a year or so before, you know, kind of we arrived with a bunch of documentary makers and artists and, you know, sort of DIY engineers wanting to try it out. And so it was an extraordinary place to be. You know, it was a moment, it was sort of a relic from a bygone era in history, but it was still a perfectly operational instrument. And when we switched it on and pointed it in the region of the planet Venus, and we heard the output of the you know, kind of the radio receiver that was receiving the signal from the antenna, it was a very emotional experience. And what we were listening to was effectively cosmic noise. You know, it was a combination of space interference, if you like, from many different objects, because Venus itself doesn't emit radio waves in a way that we can detect with an instrument here on Earth. But still, the experience, you know, this incredibly humbling experience of listening to space for the first time in this former Soviet you know, kind of military facility that was now being used to advance, you know, kind of human understanding of the universe, was pretty special.
So I may be biased when I say this, but I've seen a lot of space through telescopes, and for a lot of it, you know, there are pretty colors and there are specks in the sky, and sure, it means something and it looks pretty. But working in radio, I think there is an intimacy to sound that beats the visual intimacy for me anyway. And I think humanity seems, or at least the modern human, seems somewhat disconnected from the larger universe. And this seems to me like a really good way to get us more connected to it. I mean, putting on a pair of headphones, listening to these sounds, having it just put directly into your brain, I think that works.
I think you make a really interesting and valid point about sound feeling like a very intimate media. And I think it's partly we're so used to looking at things, and our whole, you know, sort of, let's say, kind of intellectual framework and our whole linguistic framework is really set up to characterize and understand the stuff that we look at. Whereas, you know, kind of sound is a little bit more of a kind of direct emotional medium, I find. And therefore, the experience that we've had when we, you know, give other people an encounter with these sounds, whether it's plasma waves on Jupiter's moon Ganymede, or radio waves from the sun, or, you know, the rhythmic beat of a pulsar, the effect that it has on people is quite emotional. You know, we found when we had our first exhibition, which was presenting these sounds in a gallery, that when people heard the sun for the first time, they often cried. You know, they sort of burst into tears because they found the experience so profound. And I think that you're absolutely right. It's something to do with this, you know, kind of peculiar impact that sound has on us that visuals perhaps don't to the same extent.
And I also think it's because we live in a world where it's complete and utter visual overload, especially now, more than ever. That's all we get. And we're bombarded by imagery and video and color. And sound is there, but I think it's still in the background. And to bring sound to the forefront like this is something special.
Yeah, and whenever we showed the, you know, kind of the gallery version of radio astronomy, we always presented the sounds in a completely black box, in a completely dark environment. And that was the reason, you know, to kind of almost take people's visual stimulus away from them so that they had, you know, they had to focus on the sound. And that was part of, I think, of what created this very immersive and quite kind of emotional feeling of connection with the phenomena they were listening to.
That was Honor Arja. You can check out her marvelous work on www.radio-astronomy.net. Also, go to the Art Science Museum in Singapore, where she is the director. They always have the best exhibitions. This has been Eureka on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and oldnavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.